is made possible in part by a grant from Horene's Pianos Plus, your Steinway Piano Showroom in Bloomington. Horene's Pianos Plus offers new and pre-owned pianos by Steinway & Sons, Boston by Steinway, and other fine pianos. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from Orange Taxi, a new taxi company providing services to the U of I campus and the Champaign-Urbana area 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at 367-8888.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. In the first hour today, the guest, Sandy Mason, horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. She's with us monthly on a Tuesday, second Tuesday of the month, I believe it is. And we talk about lawn and garden care, things that grow in the home landscape. So if you have questions about trees and shrubs, flowering plants, vegetables, any and all that kind of stuff, you can give us a call. Maybe you're still fighting some kind of problem, or you're already starting to think about what you're going to do next year. And any and all of that is certainly welcome. 333-9455. We also have toll-free line. Good anywhere that you can hear us. 800-222-9455. Well, very nice to have you with us once again.
Good morning.
Is it now too late to do a fall lawn, either fertilizer, weed control, one and the other?
No, actually, even late season like this, it's for our cool season grasses, they really sort of come into their own. This is kind of their time. If we could get some rain, that would help. But this would be the time you could actually think about if you've got some broadleaf weeds that you've really had some problems with and you choose to use an herbicide. It's a good time to take care of those for things like dandelions, creeping Charlie, and some of those. So it's certainly not too late for that. Even some of the annual weeds that are starting to germinate, those cool season annual weeds, so things like hen bit, I noticed was flowering the other day. It looks very similar to creeping Charlie. So even if you have some of those kind of weeds, you might even think about controlling those. And really, a last fertilization is usually done in November, believe it or not. Uh-huh. So it's not too late to worry about your lawn, I guess.
Well, I think about a month ago, I went out and I got one of these combination weed and feed products mm-hmm. sold mm-hmm. as a winterizer, and I put that down. And I guess I was hoping to see a little bit more visible result, particularly on things like clover and creeping Charlie. It just didn't seem to. They look a little pale, but they're still there.
They're just angry now.
I ticked them off, and you don't want to do that. So I just wondered, well, is there still going to be some effect down the line? Or I don't know. I figured I would do the same thing probably in the springtime. Right. Maybe if you keep doing that over time, they'll get discouraged.
Well, for some of the harder to kill things, certainly clover and creeping Charlie, that usually one application isn't going to do it anyway. Yeah. I will tell you that. You certainly should have seen some sort of effect, especially on dandelions and some of the other weeds. But, you know, sometimes herbicides don't work very well if it's particularly dry or if it's particularly warm. Sometimes it's just the weeds aren't actively growing, and so it just doesn't quite work as well. So sometimes we can have a problem just because of the environmental conditions. But I certainly wouldn't, give up. At this point, you certainly could still do that.
Okay.
Get some control.
Well, we got several people here lined up and ready to go, and we'll just start right in with line number one. Hello.
Oh, good morning. Mm-hmm. I have a terrible problem with squirrels digging holes in our landscaping around the front of our house. Any recommendations of something to either spray on the mulch or any remedies for getting rid of squirrels?
Boy, is that a loaded question. I probably the one things you can do, are they like digging up bulbs or they're just sort of digging around?
No, just digging little holes like maybe to put their food or I'm not sure what.
Yeah, they're probably planting things probably for you. I really probably about the only thing, there certainly are some repellent kinds of things that can be sprayed. Haven't seen that. I will tell you that I haven't seen that to be all that terribly effective. Some people say they have had luck with some of the hot pepper sprays and some of those.
We tried those and
I've heard kind of mixed results on that. Some people think it's worked. Unfortunately, I guess this is good or bad, about the only thing that I've seen that really works very well is actually to put some like hardware cloth or chicken wire underneath the mulch. And then as they start to dig, they can't do anything, so they get kind of upset about it and find someplace else. But that's not much fun for you to have to put down. But I will tell you that's probably about the only thing that I've ever seen that works very well.
I see.
So, yeah, I know it's not a good solution, but it's, as far as I know, it's the only one that's really worked very well.
Because it seems every morning we go out and there are new holes dug.
Yeah, and if they're not doing a whole lot of damage, I mean, they certainly can dig up bulbs and stuff, and that's when I probably worry about it more. You know, this is that time period where they're going to be doing that, so eventually they will sort of quit that. So it's kind of a seasonal thing for the most part.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Yeah, right, I wish there was a better solution.
Okay.
I keep thinking about, you know, something like a bobcat, a lynx, a puma.
As in
you know, could we just introduce some small to medium-sized predators?
What a good idea. You mentioned that to the powers that be and see how far you get with that one, okay?
All right.
Let me know.
Okay. Well, I'm friends with a lot of people in high places. Line number two is next. Hello.
Good morning, David. I'm with you on the bobcat.
Okay, good.
I think we should import a lot of them.
Yeah, probably take care of a lot of other things.
We had as many rats running around as we have squirrels, and causing as much damage, we'd be in an uproar. Sandy, I have a question for you. I had one of the larger ginkgo trees in town come down on my house this summer with that windstorm we had.
Too bad.
I went from a complete shade yard to complete sun in my backyard.
Wow.
And I have bottle brush buckeye. I have lots of hostas, ginger, some quite a few things that were thriving quite well in the shade, and of course look pretty burned up now. I'm wondering to what extent they will come up next spring and be okay with an adjustment, i.e., since they won't have the shock of all of a sudden being in the sun, and to what extent that I'm just going to lose them anyway and would be better off having a plant sale next spring.
And give me your address, okay?
Yeah.
I guess a couple things. You know, if they're well-established plants, they certainly can survive a time, with not ideal conditions, and certainly the full sun. Probably the biggest thing for shade plants that suddenly have sun is water. So any time that you can, and we certainly haven't had the rain that we would hope to have had, but this would be the time I'd be thinking about watering them. So at least that they're well hydrated going into winter, which means that they hopefully will do well going through winter. And I'd be surprised if it just that one season would have taken them out completely, unless you had something that was brand new or really, really delicate. So watering would be important. But long-term success, you're absolutely right. Some of these things are not going to do well full sun long-term. So next spring, I don't know if you have any shade anywhere else, you might think about transplanting things, doing some other things. I've certainly seen bottlebrush buckeye, although we normally think of it in getting some shade. I have seen it in full sun areas. As long as it's given a certain amount of moisture, it actually does fairly well.
Uh-huh.
So that one may not be one that you really have to think about moving too much. But, all the wildflower ginger and stuff like that is just not going to, they're just going to fry up, basically, as you found out.
Okay.
So I wouldn't give up on them yet, but I'd think about movement.
Yeah. Well, that's fairly limited, so I'll let you know when the sale
is. Yeah. Yeah, that's too bad. That's sad.
All right, thank you.
Good luck.
All right, thanks for the call. Well, let's go to line number three next. Hello.
Hello. I'd like to ask two questions, if I may.
Sure.
We have a new home. My first question is, I'd like to put a tree in, but is it too late in the season to add a tree this year?
No, actually, really, I've planted clear through mid-November and not had a problem with it. So as far as the trees and shrubs, I wouldn't have a problem with that right now. So
great.
I'd say go for it.
All right.
And just make sure that this well, again, I'm sort of back to the well-watering thing. If we don't end up with a little bit of rain, just make sure it doesn't dry out too much.
Mm-hmm. My second question is kind of I'm new to the whole garden idea. When they refer to, like, light shade and partial sun.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of like the number of hours of sunlight, what exactly does that refer to?
Yeah. You know, it's one of those variable things. But usually what's considered full sun is 8 hours or more.
Uh-huh.
So if it's getting full sun, 8 hours or more, and then we start dropping back. It's like partial sun would be like 6 to 8 hours. We start getting into, half shade. We might be getting into like 4 hours, or partial shade might be about 4 hours. But that's really kind of, kind of a moving target to some extent. But that should give you some idea. And then full shade, we're usually talking about, maybe 1 to 2 hours at the most. And shade varies, shade underneath the honey locust tree is very different than shade underneath the sugar maple, being much more dense than the other. So you have to kind of think about that a little bit, too.
Great. Thank you very much.
Hopefully that gives you some idea.
All right. Very good. And line four, toll-free line. Hello.
Hello. got a piece of land that no one's really kept under control to some extent, which doesn't really bother me, but bothers my wife. I've got some roses. They're just growing straight up in the air. Could be 7 or 8 feet tall.
What?
Got a lilac bush. I guess just calling it a bush doesn't really make sense because it's some of it's, I'm guessing, 10, 12 feet tall.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And a grape arbor, which doesn't produce any grapes, but sure grows like crazy, I guess. And my question was going to be, can you do irreparable damage by pruning at this time of the year on those kinds of things? I'd like to take a lilac bush way back so that instead of looking out, it'll be a kitchen window, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of just seeing, limbs, you'd actually see some lilacs.
Right.
I called a couple places around, and they had to have definite, what's the name of it, you got the Latin name, in fact, and stuff. And I was just hoping there was a general thing that, I wouldn't kill anything or, ruin it to some extent that it couldn't be brought back to, to real life and the way it's supposed to look eventually.
Right. Well, in horticulture, we talk about ideals all the time. And ideally, I would wait until spring.
Okay.
And certainly with the lilac, I'd probably wait until after it flowers.
Okay.
Because if you prune it now, you're going to prune off all the flower buds. And my feeling is, why not wait till next year and enjoy the flowers? And then right after they bloom, then think about pruning it back. And if it's a really established plant, you can do some major pruning on lilacs, and usually they do a very good job of coming back.
How far back can I go from 10 feet to what, would you say?
Well, I probably, on a plant like that, you could probably take it clear down to the ground and not have any problem if it's that well established.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
it's
that's going to...
been there quite some time.
Yeah.
But
what you might want to do is just take a couple feet off, over a period of time. And so that way it sort of maintains. And some people actually kind of like that almost tree-like effect.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, so it may not be anything you want to take to the ground.
Life doesn't sell.
Yes, but you certainly can take them down quite a bit, and they're really pretty good about going ahead and leafing out, even on some of that more woody stuff,
because
I've been playing around with that myself.
She's real concerned about the roses. I don't know if it's a particular kind or not, but anyway, they look like tall prairie grass almost.
So we don't know really what... Do you know when they bloom normally?
Best I can get from the original owner was normally.
Normally?
Yeah.
I like
time,
that.
It usually blooms.
It's a normal bloom.
So, I don't think it's anything special, at least.
Yeah. The only reason I ask about it is that sometimes on those roses, if they only bloom once and they bloom in the spring, they actually bloom on old wood. So if you prune them in the spring, it's kind of the same thing with the roses. If you prune them in the spring, you're going to lose your flower buds. Maybe you don't care at this point, but it'd be another plant that really all those plants, I would wait until spring unless it's just really, really bugging you.
And take them back. No, it's no big deal.
Yeah, I would say, if you're talking about certainly on the grapes and the roses, I'd be thinking about for the grapes, I'd probably be thinking about February, March. For the roses, I'd probably be thinking about 1st of April, and then, once the lilacs bloom, then I'd go ahead and prune those back
too.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thank you. Just for anybody who's not sure about why it is, the recommendation is that at this time of year, you not do pruning.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, as I understand it, is what you really don't want to do at this point is you don't want to promote growth.
Right.
And so that's why we say, the plant it's slowing down, it's getting ready to go into this kind of dormant, time when it's going to be resting, and you don't want it to suddenly putting out, getting excited, putting out new growth, because that stuff, it's not going to make it through winter.
It usually winter kills. Anytime you have like a real succulent growth, we get a cold spell, it just will die back, which doesn't really help you too much. But the other thing, especially on the woody plants, is that if you think about it, all that wood there is actually food storage. It's food reserves for the plant. And so the feeling is that, why take the food away for it when it's getting ready to go into what could be a difficult time? So why not just leave some of that food reserves on, see what happens through the winter time? If some of that dies back, then that's fine. You know what to cut off. But at least those food reserves are available to the plant if it truly needs it, when it starts up again in the springtime. So that would be one reason why we might want to do a lot of heavy pruning at the time, for those two reasons.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Sandy Mason, our guest. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And monthly she's here. We talk about lawn and garden care, things that grow in the home landscape. And if you have questions, you can call 333-9455, toll free, 800 1-800-222-9455. We have a caller in Marshall, Illinois, line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, I have a crepe myrtle, and it blooms late in the season.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard you say that you don't prune them prune most of these plants until spring, but it dies way back, and mm-hmm. it comes up from the roots.
Right.
And I just wondered if, you know, clipping it back now might help it. And it doesn't flower a whole lot. One hasn't flowered at all yet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it, we got it in Galveston, so it mm-hmm. really, I'm surprised it even lives. I just wondered, should I just wait then just do nothing till spring? Is that what you suggest?
That would be my suggestion. Crepe myrtles are just marginally hardy. I mean, you're just really, in protected sites, sometimes people are able to keep them winter after winter. But, generally, they're always going to do what you just said, where they actually die down to the ground and have to come back from the roots. But, again, I would wait until spring. See what dies back. You know, maybe you'll have a halfway decent winter where it doesn't die clear to the ground, and you'll actually still have some wood there and make the plant a little bit bigger for you. So
it's very healthy-looking plant.
So I just wait till spring, you know, enjoy it. And,
okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you.
All right. And to another caller here. This is Champagne, line two. Hello.
Oh, hello.
Mm-hmm.
I have two questions. One is about raspberries. I have the kind that bloom both in the spring and the fall.
Mm-hmm.
And the spring is much more abundant than the fall. And I wondered if I should do some trimming after the spring, or just when do you trim?
Mm-hmm. Well, for those ever-bearing ones, usually you're still going to be trimming off the old stuff. It's just that those stems produce twice, whereas the regular bearing or the single bearing types of raspberries, just those stems or canes will only produce once. And so after the spring one, generally, then you're going to see which ones are actually dying. They've already gone through their two flowering and fruiting periods, and so now it's time to go ahead and prune those back.
Oh,
so if that makes sense,
that have produced.
Right.
Right. Do they look dead or are the plants?
Usually they look dead. They certainly have a color difference and normally a little browner than the other ones. Usually you can tell they're a little bigger. And most of the time they actually do go ahead and die off. So usually it's fairly obvious. Sometimes on the everbearer, sometimes people just mow them over and just do it as a one crop system rather than having a two crop, which makes it a little easier. You don't have to singly take out certain canes. But you can't do that with those, too.
Oh, well, thank you. Mm-hmm. My second question is about my New England asters. I just heard you say that if when you prune them, that promotes growth. And I was trying to keep them under control because mm-hmm. They're just too wild.
As in they flop over? Or?
Yeah.
What the best thing I found for asters, and actually that's one time the rabbits have actually helped me out a little bit, is when the asters get to be about 4 to 6 inches tall in the spring, early summer, trim their heads off a little bit. Just cut the heads off, and then they will actually branch a little more. They'll bloom a little bit later, but they won't get nearly as tall, and they'll stand up better for you. And that's really worked out well for me.
Excuse me, you trim the heads.
Yeah, you just take off the little tips of the stems.
Oh, just the tips.
Yeah, it's kind of like what we would think about with mums. We do it all the time with mums, where you just want to take out just the top portion, you know, maybe only a half inch or so on each one of the stems, and then they will actually branch out and then
I don't really want them to, they're too, they've been branching out too much.
Well, they'll stay much more compact for you by doing it that way.
Uh-huh.
Certainly, they do recede themselves. Maybe you're getting some receding there, too.
Yeah,
and then the clumps will actually get bigger. So you may have a situation where, you know, maybe you want to make sure you deadhead them, you know, after they've produced their flowers. You might want to take off those heads so they don't go ahead and recede.
Oh.
That would be one thing. Or maybe the clumps themselves need to be divided.
Yeah.
You may be seeing that kind of thing, too.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And when do you trim? You trim roses in the spring?
Normally around the 1st of April, unless they're an early blooming one that only blooms once.
No, mine bloom all year.
Okay. Then I'd usually around April 1st or so.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Uh-huh. All right, thanks for the call. I kind of have that same problem with my mums, and I've been doing what I think you're supposed mm-hmm. to do, and that is, you know, all through the course of the mm-hmm. summer, continue to cut them back or mm-hmm. pinch them back. And then I've had a nice show of flowers. You know, they look really do healthy plants. But it seems like there are so many flowers, they can't hold themselves up. They get sort
so
of
still
so they're sort of still kind of flopping over.
Yeah, and it may be something if the clump's been there for a while, it may be time to divide it. You may be something like that. If you've had it for a while, you might decide you want to divide. I'd probably do that in the spring, but go ahead and divide it. So the clump isn't quite so big. But you, I don't know how often you're doing it, but you can do it every time. You know, you can do it several times throughout the season. Usually around the 4th of July, we quit doing it.
Yeah, I think I went past that. They seem
Uh-oh.
To be okay.
No, they were fine.
Well, that's another thing I wonder because again, that's sort of like the general. At some point, you're supposed to stop.
Right.
But because they did seem in the past, they just seemed to get so leggy, and kind of flop over. Now I suppose I could just put use something to make them stand up.
Are they getting plenty of sun?
Yeah.
Okay. Because sometimes if things are in more shade, they have a tendency to open up. Or are you fertilizing at all?
Yeah, usually a little bit, at least early.
Sure I'd fertilize them at all.
At all? Okay.
Unless you use something that I wouldn't use much nitrogen on them, because sometimes that can also kind of promote some legginess on them.
Huh, okay. Well, maybe also that might be time to think about dividing them and mm-hmm. starting them some other places. Give the rabbits something more to eat in the spring. Let's see. What are we going to talk to you next? Let's go to Indiana, Mill Creek Valley, Indiana, line number 4.
What a lovely name.
Hello.
Well, thank you. I'd like to ask you about my crazy magnolia tree, but I'm not going to. And I want to ask a question about hydrangeas, and I've got mm-hmm. a really heavy problem with yucca. You know how I'm looking after a cemetery, and you know how they used to plant those in decoration.
Yeah.
And those things are harder than whack to get rid of.
I know they are. I talk to more people on how to get rid of those than I do on how to grow those.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can cut off the leaves, but those roots are bad.
Yeah, yeah. It is very difficult. And usually you try and – what I've seen, I know it's hard to dig out, but try to dig out whatever you can. And then if you choose to use one of the non-selective herbicides, you sometimes just as those new sprouts come up, sometimes you can hit them with Roundup.
Okay.
It's tough.
Okay, Roundup. I've got that. I put some on just the plant itself, and it killed the Roundup and spit it out for some.
Usually, you have to dig out the mother plant. Usually, that mother plant is so well established that it's kind of tough. And I actually have also seen people would just put black plastic over that area.
Oh yeah.
And then just sort of wait it out. You know, eventually it'll get to the point where it can't get any light, and so that's the end of that.
Okay.
So you might try that too.
Yeah.
Cut it off and then put black plastic over it.
Well, I think these are the great-great-grandmothers down in. Bad news.
Well established.
How about the hydrangeas then? I wanted to know what to do with them over winter. Should I cut them back, and if so, how far?
Do you know what kind of hydrangea it is? Is it the big white one with the...
What kind is it? Blue hydrangeas.
Oh, well, now the blue hydrangeas often are the ones that bloom on old wood, as in wood that's produced the year before, kind of like we think of with lilacs and forsythia and stuff. So you don't want to prune those now, and you don't want to prune them next spring. Generally, you'd prune them right after they flower.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because otherwise you're going to be taking off the flower buds.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Sure.
I think my magnolia tree needs private consultation, probably.
Is it blooming right now?
Hey, listen, it blooms and blooms and it just keeps going.
Yeah, it's funny. It's probably one of the saucer magnolias, but they are kind of funny. They're, throughout the summer, you'll see sporadically these flowers on them. It's like, what's going on here? I don't know. It's just one of the things that they do. Maybe they're happy. They're just happy. And if they live in Mill Creek Valley, Indiana.
It's a little sunshine and out it comes.
Yeah, there you go.
Hey, thanks a lot.
All right, sure. Thank you for the call. We will continue, and then we have next someone in Urbana, line 1, right here. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question about a potted plant. I hope it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I have a poinsettia that I got last Christmas, and I nursed it all the way through the winter, and this summer it's got beautiful leaves. I transplanted it to a larger pot.
Mm-hmm.
But is this the time of year you're supposed to bring them in and put them in the dark closet?
Yep, this is it.
Okay, now when they're in the closet, do you also water them?
Well, that's the one thing how it makes the poinsettias a little bit difficult or a little bit more painstaking is you have to, during the day, you do have to bring them out.
Oh.
And let them, yeah, you can't just sort of stick them in the closet and forget about them. They're continuing to grow. So you put them in a dark area, and sometimes people just put them in a room that they don't use very often, or they put a box over them or something. You just have to make sure that they get a long night, short day.
I see.
And then you have to let them, you know, do their thing during the day, so they need light during the day. So you would, to answer your question, you would certainly continue to water them.
Okay. And then you put them like near a bright window?
Yeah. Make sure that they're near a bright window. And,
okay.
And so every night you're going to have to sort of babysit them.
Okay.
Make sure they're in and out. But so you've babied it this long. Why not?
Okay.
Good luck.
It's just a challenge I've taken on to see if I can get it to.
Sure.
Yeah.
Hey, go for it.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Well, how much light during the daytime do you want them to have?
Well,
a couple hours?
Yeah. Or? Well, no, you probably need more than that. Usually what I tell people is about the time you're having dinner, like 5 or 6 o'clock in the evening, that's the time you need to think about putting your poinsettia in the dark.
Okay.
So make sure, you know, put it in there. And then in the morning when you're getting ready to leave for your day around 8 o'clock or so, that's the time you need to bring it back out again. So, you know, it's kind of have a work day.
Sort of an
eight to five work day. Just keep, you know, if you can kind of get used to that habit, then usually you can go ahead and get them into flower. And then once you start seeing a little bit of color on them, you do want to continue that for a while. But eventually when they really start showing good color, then you don't have to do that anymore.
Okay. Next is caller in Urbana, line number two. Champagne, line number two.
Hi.
Yes.
I'm not much of a gardener, and I keep trying. And I bought some perennials at the Mother's Day sale,
mm-hmm.
and I never planted them. Is it too late to plant them?
Where have they been?
They've been sitting in their pots on my porch.
Do they still look okay?
They're looking a little ragged, but they're still green, and they flowered all summer.
Oh, wow. Well, hey. If you got them to live through the summer, I'd say you're doing it pretty good as a gardener. I would get them in the ground as soon as you can. I wouldn't wait much later than this.
Okay, so
you
shouldn't bring them in the house.
No. Really, most of the perennials, and whether they're trees, shrubs, or whatever, they need a dormant period for the most part, or at least a cool period. So my feeling would I'd be getting them in the ground as soon as you can.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm. All right. Bye. And to, Charleston, line three. Hello.
Hi. We're landscaping a new yard, and I'd like some advice about planting shrubs. Mm-hmm. I have a book on landscaping that says that you dig a hole and put the shrub in there, and then you fill the hole with unamended soil so the roots will grow outward. But I'm sure they're not talking about our kind of unamended soil. It's about 75% clay and 25% rocks. Yeah. What would you suggest?
Well, I'd still go back to what they were saying, because they found out more and more is that if you amend that soil in that hole, the roots never have any inclination to move out of that. So the roots just sort of stay in that. So they're almost sort of in a pot. They never venture out into the clay stuff, because why would they? All the good stuff is, you know, right there. So they still say not to amend the soil, even when it's clay like yours. What I would be doing is probably looking at those shrubs and trees that do okay in clay or areas. Is this just clay, or is it just to the point where it's actually a low area where it stays real wet? Or,
well, it's the dirt that came up from where they dug the basement,
yeah.
which hasn't seen the light of day for millennia.
Yeah,
there's
right.
No organic matter in it. To speak
right,
of.
Right. Right. I it's one of those things. I wouldn't be opposed to just maybe adding a little organic matter, just to the point where maybe you're providing a certain amount of nutrients there. But I wouldn't do the whole thing where you just put on all, you know, brand new soil and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
So we
have spread an inch or so of compost over the whole yard.
Oh, that's
good. Getting grass going. We're going to mix that in.
Oh, that's great.
Would that be sufficient?
Yeah, sure. And I think that's great. At least you have something there. And then just making good selections on plants that you think are going to do well in those what are usually considered areas that are not very well drained.
Well, do you have some suggestions on shrubs that would do well in that kind of?
Yeah, right off the top of my head, I don't. How big do you want them to get, or do you care?
Not very big.
And I assume this
will
is
be across the front of the house, so we don't want it to.
So I assume this is full sun and.
Yeah, full sun.
The whole thing. Gosh, nothing is coming to mind right now. I'm a total blank. All I can think of is things that get really big. I tell you what, are you here in Champaign?
No, we're in Charleston.
Okay. Actually, Coles County has a very nice Master Gardener program as well as Champaign County. So I would check with your Coles County Extension office.
Okay.
And they can probably lead you through some plant selections, because I'm just having a mind blank here on things that you might use that are going to be short like that. Sorry.
Okay. Well, thanks for trying.
All right.
Yeah, unless something comes to me. Maybe a caller will... have a suggestion here, but or if I think of something before the show ends, I'll
okay.
let you know.
Okay,
thanks for the call. Someone here on Think on a Cell Phone is next, line number four. Hello.
Yeah, hello.
Mm-hmm.
I have an amaryllis that I've set outside, and when is the best time to bring that in, and how do you take care of it when you bring it in?
Mm-hmm.
And then next year, if I set it back out again, is it better for it to be in the sun or the shade when I replant it next spring?
Mm-hmm. For amaryllis bulbs, really, we normally think about the 1st of September or so as far as putting it into its sort of dormant period, but that's, you can do it now. It really doesn't matter.
The leaves are still green on it.
Yeah, I would put it somewhere, at this point, I'd put it somewhere where it's out of the sun, you know, don't water it, just sort of let it go dormant on its own, and then once the leaves start to yellow up, then usually we count at least 2 months of dormant period, and then you can bring them back out again and then start watering them, and then the leaves will, you know, emerge and should get flowers at that point. And as far as putting them outside, I generally anything that we're taking in and out, I think it's better off to probably have them in some shade.
In some shade.
Yeah, because especially sometimes you put them out in full sun, they have a tendency to scorch, you know, if they've been inside, which is normally what our amaryllis would have been, because you would have been growing it on as a house plant during the winter time. So I'd probably put it in shade and leave it in shade.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And let's see, to a local caller here, Champaign, line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
I just tuned in late, but somebody said something about his magnolia, but I have four concerns about my magnolia.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big, huge tree growing out in the deck. I want to know when to prune it. It's so green and thick right now.
Mm-hmm.
I had it pruned 2 years ago in the fall, and it did okay. Secondly, it's got a huge trunk, and the trunk is kind of growing into the wood deck. Can I just cut the deck around so the trunk can continue growing? And third, it's had this black ooze coming out of it. And then I had these light green nodules in July and August among the leaves. So I just need all that help with my magnolia.
Okay, where do we start here? I would probably prune them after they flower. I mean, you might as well enjoy the flowers.
Okay.
So I would wait until spring and then enjoy the flowers and then prune them. Because they're already putting on their flower buds now and actually have their flower buds, if you notice. The other thing is I would definitely cut around the deck and so that the trunk can continue to expand. I mean, you certainly don't want to get to the point where it's having a problem expanding. What was your other question? Oh,
these black ooze stuff that was coming out.
Is it coming out of a wound or an area that's been damaged? Yeah. They certainly can do some bleeding. I'm not sure. I mean, if it looks like a healthy tree and it sounds like it's doing fine, I'm not sure I'd worry about it too much.
Okay.
Now, the light green nodules, is this at the very ends of the branches?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Kind of thing? Are you sure it's not trying to set fruit?
Well,
they actually have these kind of funny looking... I don't know how to explain it. Kind of, it's where the flower used to be, and they'll produce these kind of pod-looking things.
Right.
And they many times they'll open up, and you'll see these little red berries inside, which are very attractive. But many times, what I've seen on these guys actually is that they don't, for some reason or other, they must not get pollinated properly, and so that sort of aborts, and you really don't get any fruit off of it. So it kind of just looks like this big, you know, like you say.
Yeah, I just had never noticed those in other years, and this year there were lots.
Yeah, and it could be maybe it got better pollinated this year.
Okay.
And so it produced those.
What about with not much rain? Should I worry about this year with not much rain for the magnolia?
I would say for any trees I have out there, I would be a little bit concerned since we've been so so low on water. You don't want plants to be stressed going into winter. It's just not a good idea. So if you get a chance to water it, I'd say yes.
I could just stick the hose down under the deck and let water that, because it's totally surrounded by a wooden deck.
Yeah, I think that would be great, especially with that deck. It may be even drier under there because we haven't had a torrential downpour. So
okay, but don't worry about pruning till the spring.
Yeah, correct.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
All right, very good. And we certainly have time for other questions, about 15 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. It's our monthly lawn and garden show. Sandy Mason is our guest. She's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. So we got a question here from someone who grew some cherry tomatoes this summer and wants to save the seeds. They have different plants. They have some yellow ones. They have some red ones. And I guess maybe my overall question would be, can you actually do that? Can you take the seeds and then plant them and then get? So there are some things you can't do that with.
Right, right.
But assuming that these tomatoes will do that and they'll breed true, you'll get the same thing back. What's the best way to do that to get those seeds and to dry them out and to save them so that next year you can plant them again?
Mm-hmm. Well, tomatoes don't do a whole lot of cross-pollination, so usually you can save the seeds unless it was some sort of hybrid to begin with, and there might be some concerns about it not being quite stable where you would get ones. But most of the time, you can get something that's quite similar to what you had before. And a couple ways you can do it. You actually just take the fruit itself and get out those seeds, but they have that gelatinous stuff around them. Put them in a little bit of water and let that ferment a little bit for a day or so, and then lay the seeds out, and then that will dry up, and then you can take that jelly stuff off because it's kind of fermented to that point where it's kind of degraded, and then dry the seed, and then you can go ahead and just store it and then start them again next year. The one way I think I'm a lazy gardener, but maybe I'm just a smart gardener, I don't know, but one thing I have done, and this has worked beautifully actually, is I just take some of the old fruit and I put them right now. I put them wherever I want those plants to come up again next year. I just put the fruit right there. And then I guarantee, and it's happened every year, come springtime, the little seeds will start to germinate. And then I just sort of select which one looks the healthiest and just let it. So I don't start my seeds indoors or anything. I just sort of do it out there in the yard.
And you don't have problems with squirrels or other varmints digging them up
and
eating them?
I just really have not had a problem with that. And it's worked out very well. So for me, I said, hey, a little less work. But that would be one thing you might try. But, if you really want to make sure you have it, I'd probably go through the whole process of drying them down.
You could do some of each.
Yeah.
Do an experiment.
Do a little experiment.
See how it goes.
But it actually has worked out very well.
All right. Good. Let's see. More callers here. Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hi. I was calling. We have a plum tree. And last year, we had just a ton of fruit. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of plums. This year, we did not have a single plum. A few developed, but they, shriveled up, and then they fell off the tree.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked up on the internet to try to figure out maybe what was going on and said possibly it was, sawflies or something. But I didn't really see any, syrupy stuff on the very few fruits that developed.
Mm-hmm.
So I was wondering, and now there are actually lots of little holes in the leaves of the tree. So I was wondering if maybe you might have a suggestion as to whether it was sawflies and what we might do about it, and also if now is a good time to prune the tree.
Mm-hmm.
I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. I guess a couple of things I'd wonder about is how well it flowered. If it flowered really well and you still didn't get any fruit, then I would wonder a little bit. Sometimes with the fruit trees, they actually get into this biennial bearing where actually every other year they actually produce a lot more fruit than the year before. And so you will kind of see that thing going on as well. I'm not sure I'd worry too much about holes in the leaves at this point in time. It sounds like the fruit didn't even develop, which I'd also not only worry about flowering, but also just the pollination. If for one reason or another, maybe they just didn't get pollinated as well, depending on environmental conditions. Although this year seemed to be a really good year. Pretty much everybody I talked to had really good conditions when it came to fruits. So I guess I'd wonder about a couple of those things. And then just if the tree was particularly healthy, they certainly do get some insects and disease problems, but I think you would have noticed that. So I guess I'd wonder about those things. But you might also look, if you have internet access, evidently, is to look on the internet and look at some of the problems that plums have in the way of insect and diseases and to see if that looks familiar. I'd also look for knots on the stem. They do get something called black knot to see if that's a problem. You probably would have noticed that, but that would be another problem that they might get. So I'd kind of look for those things and see if there isn't something going on.
Okay. Hope that helps. Next caller is in Marshall on our toll-free line, line 4. Hello.
Yeah. I put in some little princess spirea about 6 weeks ago. And when should I prune and shape them and do that? I know somebody said in April, but how can they bloom if I do it in April?
Well, actually, those guys bloom on new wood, the spireas do. So that's,
they do.
Yeah, so that's not an issue. And I'd still, especially since they're brand new, I'd still probably wait till April to do some shaping on them and then let them go from there. Usually that little princess doesn't need a whole lot of pruning because it's fairly short one anyway.
Yeah. Okay, thanks. Mm-hmm.
All right, and let's see, to Chicago. This is the next person, line 2. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. I'm getting concerned because you can't keep mentioning watering. We've had, for the past 2 weeks, it's rained once each week, and it was like more than 6 hours of rain.
Oh,
that
that's great.
Wasn't enough.
No, I guess I should have qualified that. In certain areas, it's been very spotty. You've certainly gotten a lot more rain than probably most of us here in the central Illinois. I'm not sure where you're located, but I'm in Monticello, and we haven't had a decent rain for a month. Okay. You know, it's been a long time. But I would say if you're getting water every week, and you know, ideally we like to see at least an inch of water a week.
Okay.
So if you're getting that, then I wouldn't worry about it. I mean,
okay,
just
then I'll ask
thank
you
your lucky stars.
My mm-hmm. original question, I'm getting ambitious now, and I want to think about a Four Seasons garden. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, are there any books on how to have a Four Seasons garden? Because I've been reading things like you can have witch hazel in the winter mm-hmm. or dogwood trees which with red bark and stuff that would still put color in the winter. So are there any books or articles about that?
There's certainly all kinds of books out there on full season gardening. I'm trying to think. I think Tracy DeSabato Ost is one of the authors that has one on, I think it's a garden design book. And you can actually, I think what works out nice for a lot of those is she has some great lists in the back of the book.
Uh-huh.
And it has stuff like these are the plants that are good for like fall color or, you know, so you can kind of do this going through, okay, these would be ones I think about for that. These would be ones I think about for spring color. And so you can kind of put this whole, the garden together that way. It's DeSabato Ost. It's hyphenated. I think it's DISABATO hyphen AUST.
AUST?
S as in Sam.
Oh, okay. Okay, then.
And so she really has a nice book and talks a lot about color, and she actually has two really good books on that okay. would probably help you with that because she has some nice lists. So I would look for any of the books like that have some lists mm-hmm. where you can kind of put your own together that way.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, thanks very much. I think also who is the, there's a woman who was really famous gardener and who has a book on theme gardens.
Oh, that's probably Barbara Damrosch.
Barbara Damrosch, mm-hmm. yes. I'm thinking, mm-hmm. and I know mm-hmm. in that book she has something that's called a winter garden.
Oh.
And the idea is that it is plants that either because they will have some color or because they have interesting shapes or mm-hmm. things like that, mm-hmm. they will add interest to the garden
right.
through the time that things are not growing.
Right.
So
right.
that might be. But I think you would, because I think, as you say, now more and more people, they want year-round interest
yeah.
in the garden.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that there's probably a fair amount of stuff that has been written, suggestions on various kinds of plants,
right.
so things you can do with the landscape so that you have something to look at during the time that nothing really is growing.
Yeah, yeah. And I think if you have the space, and I think a lot of times we get into that, you know, here's the flower garden, here's the trees and shrubs over here, but to sort of think about actually incorporating some shrubs into your flower border, and that way you have some, either they have nice stems, or even she was talking about witch hazel, you know, that's a nice, it gets big, but if you have some space, there's no reason why you couldn't have that within your flower garden area. So you do have something to look at in the wintertime, either through nice stems or whatever, or the early flowers yeah. or whatever. So don't, you know, I think people sort of expand their horizons a little bit and not just think about strictly flowers in the flower garden.
Well, I think that's also something that Tracy DeSabato Ost writes about, mm-hmm. in taking different, really different kinds of plants and mixing, knowing how to mix them
right,
together
right,
so you
right.
don't have things so starkly as you say, laid out so that you get your flowers over here and you get your shrubs right over there. And there's a way to mix things together.
Right. And there's some wonderful dwarf conifers now. I mean, you know, little evergreen types of things that are truly dwarf, don't grow very fast. And they actually can look very attractive in the wintertime. So you actually have a little bit more color. So don't be afraid to use those too.
Cell phone here, line number 3 is next.
Hello.
Yes, hi.
Hi. Actually, a couple of callers back, he answered a few of my questions about fruit trees, but I still wanted to ask. I've got specifically, I've got a peach tree in the backyard that is a hardy little survivor. It's managed to survive, you know, a hot winter, hot summers, and children climbing on it and stuff. What concerns me most is that I've never pruned it,
mm-hmm.
and it has become scraggly looking. It's very thin branches that reach a long way from multiple trunks.
Right.
And what I would really love to do is prune it back somewhat radically in order to strengthen the tree.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want to kill it, for one thing, because I know less than zero about fruit trees. And I also would like to, actually keep it fruiting next year, because it does produce some of the most wonderful peaches. And I'm an absolute peach fan.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I had more peach trees, but I don't know anything about them, and I don't want to, you know, be responsible for mass murder of peaches. I was wondering if you could give me a little bit more peach-specific advice, and I think what I'll do is I'll go ahead and hang up and let you talk, if that's all right.
Yeah, no, that's fine.
Yeah, thank you.
I guess you evidently have found one that's hardy. That's probably the biggest thing with peaches, is that some of them are really not all that terribly hardy, and so you really have to select those. And usually what happens is they just bloom so early in the season that our late frosts get them, and so the flowers are dead, and then we don't end up with any peaches. So, and evidently you've selected one that really works out well, and there are some Reliance and Red Haven, and there's several of them out there that do well in that. As far as pruning, generally peaches are a little bit different in that usually we wait and see how well they're flowering first before we do a lot of pruning on them, which is a little bit different than we do with apples, which normally we prune in February and March, is to kind of wait and see what kind of flowering you get on it so that you can see what's going on. I don't want to cut all this off because then I'm going to be cutting off all my flower buds. So usually we wait. Once they start to flower, then I would start thinking about doing some pruning on it as far as bringing it down. Peaches definitely need to be pruned every year. They produce lots and lots and lots of fruits. And usually you want to open up the center so you get better air circulation, and also just so they'll ripen better for you. So actually doing some of that. I would hesitate to do like major, major pruning all in one year, because with those fruit trees, and they all do it for the most part, is that if you do lots of pruning, it's sort of suddenly you get all the, it just, they sort of take off and you get all these little branches coming up and water sprouts and all this stuff happening. And so it almost encourages too much growth if you do a lot of heavy pruning. So you may decide that, okay, this year I'm going to take out these couple of branches. Next year I'm going to take out these couple of branches, and kind of decide, if it hasn't been pruned for a long time, I'd kind of decide over a period of a couple of years on which branches I want to take out, and then try to, on a regular basis every year, do that pruning, and then you won't have to do any major pruning each year.
Okay. I know that Extension has publications about growing fruit, and that will do things like that, to talk about pruning and actually show you some examples about what it is they're talking about, so you can kind of get an idea. So that's one. I'm sure that there are other books out there, but that's one thing Extension has.
Yeah, and just get an idea what you want to do, what you think you want to do, and then I just say go for it. Usually you're not going to kill the thing off. Obviously, there's some ways that are better than others, but usually you're not going to kill them off. So I just say go for it, and you kind of just have to just do it.
All right. We'll try and get at least one more caller here. Peoria, line number 4. Hello.
Hi. We're looking for a trees that we can put in that grow very fast. The highway cut down a bunch of trees that were shading us, filtering out the noise and so on. And so we're pretty bare, and we were wondering what we could put in that would grow fast.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I think probably what the only problem with anything that grows very flat, fast in the tree world is that they tend to be very weak wooded.
Yeah, that's what I'm afraid.
Yeah, so what I would probably, this would be, again, I'm always talking about ideals, but ideally what would be nice is if you can put up something that's fast growing, you know, plant something that's fast growing, but nearby plant something that you know is going to last longer. Things like whether they're oaks or whatever you choose, but something that's going to last longer for you. And then those other trees can kind of act as nurse trees, and then, and
what
also
would you
just help you.
That?
As far as the nurse trees go, you know, I wouldn't normally recommend willows, but there are some willows that actually grow very fast, and they're kind of the shrubby type. And the nice thing is they will help to not only cut down a little bit of the noise, but also the view. But they're definitely not ones that I would consider much past, say, 15 years, and then that'd be the time to cut them down, and then hopefully your other trees are big enough.
So if we mixed willows with, say, maples?
Yeah, it might be something where you want to go with, and I don't know what trees that you're thinking about. You might even think about something like a shingle oak that tends to keep its leaves, even though they're brown, it keeps its leaves even through the winter time, so actually get a little view there. I don't know if you want to think about evergreens. You know, if you have enough space, then you might think about evergreens, something that's going to give you cover throughout the year. And that's when you can think about it, whether it's spruces or, you know, Norway spruce. Or I'd probably go with some of the spruces that maintain their needles longer and are a little thicker, sort of windbreak as well as an eye break, I guess.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Well, we're just about the point here. We have to finish up. Any last thing you'd like to leave with folks?
It's certainly not too late as far as, you know, planting, if you want to plant trees and shrubs, but also all the spring flowering bulbs. This is you'll appreciate it. Next spring, I guarantee you'll appreciate the fact that you spent a little time planting some daffodils or tulips or whatever.
Okay. The thing I always how critical is planting depth? Do you really have to go out there with a ruler and, you know, be that careful?
It's one of those. I mean, you really, we're again, talking about ideas. They're healthy, you know, for the bigger bulbs. You do want them, you know, want them deeper. You want them 6 to 8 inches. Now, a ruler, I wouldn't worry about it too much. You don't have to quite do that. But to realize, yeah, you're going to have to do it. The smaller bulbs, crocuses and some of those, we're putting them about 3 inches deep. And I discovered these bulb augers. I don't know if anybody else has, but I'm sure other people have. But anyway, they actually is something that fits under your drill.
Yeah.
It's a little auger thing. And it's wonderful for planting, especially when the ground's a little hard like we've had recently. But they're wonderful for planting lots of bulbs very quickly.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see you next month.
Sure.
Sandy Mason, she's horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Each month she's here on Second Tuesday, and we talk about lawn and garden care. Coming up on the Afternoon Magazine today, look at American history through the eyes of our closest animal companion, the dog. Celeste Quinn talks with Mike Durr. He's an historian, author of the book A Dog's History of America, How Our Best Friend Explored, Conquered, and Settled a Continent. And then later on, she'll be taking a look at the making of a classic recording, Johnny Cash at Folsom Prison. It's coming up today on the Afternoon Magazine. Gets underway at noon here on AM 580. Celeste Quinn is the host. Programming here on AM 580 made possible in part by a grant from the Thrifty Nichols American Classifieds, distributed each Thursday in over 100 towns in East Central Illinois, on the web at AmericanClassifieds.com. Today's programming also made possible by a grant from the Living Yoga Center in downtown Champaign, offering a variety of classes designed to help students bring balance into their lives by finding strength and serenity through the practice of yoga. New introductory classes begin the week of October 18th. No registration is necessary. For more information, call 384-5829 or visit their website at www.livingyogacenter.net. In the next part of the show, we'll be talking with Scott Althaus. He's Associate Professor of Speech Communication and Political Science at U of I about political communication and political campaigns, that in a little bit. We'll have news at 1 minute past the hour. First, an update on the markets.
And with this update on the markets at 10:59, I'm Jay Pierce. Good morning. Wheat on the